This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org.
Hi, I'm Margot Rose. I was Eileen in The Inner Light on Next Generation, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Tea Earl Grey hot.
Welcome to another cup of Earl Grey, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to the next generation. I'm your host, Justin Ozer, and join with me today are Richard Marquez and Amy Nelson. Richard, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic today. Like we've been doing this all day.
Well, yeah, we have a special episode that we'll talk about in a moment here. But Amy, how are you doing today?
I am doing great. Watched some good movies over the weekend and ready to talk about them.
Yet more hints of what we'll be talking about. Excellent. Well, and we have a little invasion from the 23rd century from the Standard Orbit crew. We have Ken Tripp, Zach Moore, and Haley Stoddard. So, Ken, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me aboard. Looking forward to doing the show with you guys.
Excellent. And Haley, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Excited to be here. First time for me.
Yeah, welcome to Earl Grey.
Thank you.
And Zach, how are you doing?
Oh, doing great. It's always fun to come over here and talk some TNG with you guys.
Excellent. So, if you haven't guessed, we're having a crossover with Standard Orbit. It's the six of us, and we'll be talking about some movies. So if you haven't already, please go back to the Standard Orbit episode from yesterday. I guess it's not required, but it's a lot of fun if you haven't listened to it. Standard Orbit 221, where we talked about the best TOS and TNG movies. We talked about Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, and we also talked about Star Trek First Contact, and we had a great discussion there. And today on Earl Grey, we are talking about the worst TOS and TNG movies, generally accepted to be at least. That would be Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, and Star Trek Nemesis. And Amy, of course, doesn't agree. We'll get into that.
I have bones to pick about it, but we'll talk about it.
We know.
Amy, listen, we went to Trek ranks, okay? And this is what they...
I went to IMDb, actually, and actually, Nemesis only beat out Insurrection by a bit, but it was Nemesis, sorry.
I'm sorry, what? What was that last movie?
I know, no, it doesn't exist for you. So many inside jokes. All right, so that's what we'll be talking about today, and what I wanted to start out by doing is to get everyone's initial thoughts about these two movies, generally considered to be the worst, but I'm sure we'll find some good things about them, right? So let me just first start off with Zach. So Zach, what are your kind of general thoughts? We'll get into the specifics about these two movies.
Well, Star Trek V, I remember like going to the store with my parents and buying it on VHS and watching it with the other ones. So it wasn't like a big... I get why people who had been watching the Star Trek movies at the time, the theaters, were like, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, they keep getting better, this is great. And then 5 comes out, and they're like, whoa, this is different. To me, it was just another tape on the shelf, you know? So they all kind of meshed together. I didn't see the distinction at the time when I was younger. And then you get older, and you start talking to other people, like, oh, yeah, Star Trek V, well, that's the worst. I'm like, Is it? And when you take a step back, you're like, okay, I can see that there are some shortcomings of this film. And I would 100% agree with the general consensus that it's the worst of the TOS movies. But there's still a lot to love here because I feel like it really recaptures an episode of the original series in a way that none of the other films do. You have a great character interactions. You have somebody hijacking the Enterprise looking for, you know, God. I mean, that sounds like a wacky third season episode of the original series, if there ever was one. And it's very enjoyable. So, you know, even though it's the worst, I have an affinity for it. Nemesis, growing up a TNG fan, this was like supposed to be our Star Trek VI, you know, the generation's final journey begins. And unfortunately, I find it to be kind of a half-baked rehash of the Wrath of Khan. You know, they hit on a lot of the same things. They have a fight in a nebula, you know, et cetera, et cetera. We'll get into the nitty-gritty here. Data was my favorite TNG character. Disappointing to see his end. And just it felt like just kind of didn't feel as... It felt tired. You know, it just felt tired. And I was not the biggest fan of Nemesis. And I also agree that it's the weakest of the TNG films.
All right. So those are your general thoughts. Richard, what are your thoughts?
I can't remember the last time. I can't remember the first time I watched The Final Frontier. I think, it just like Zach, I think I went into Blockbuster, you know, the store that doesn't exist anymore, and just watched it because it was Star Trek. When I saw Nemesis, I think it came in 2002. I was in the Army, so I never saw it until many years later because, I mean, I was in the Army at that time and I didn't have time. Yeah, I mean, both are equally enjoyable for their rank, but okay, yeah. I'm not going to go any further. I don't want to do what I did last time and just say, hey, this is the great movie. No. So.
Yeah, this before I go into the next person, this episode may be an interesting challenge because I hear the less excitement and enthusiasm that we had on the Scattered Orbit episode so far. So, on that note, Amy, what are your general thoughts?
I agree with The Final Frontier being the worst of the TOS. I definitely enjoy the other movies much, much more than I do The Final Frontier. I like The Final Frontier. There's definitely some parts in it that are very enjoyable, and there's some good themes in there that I think we can all take, and it shows, you know, the Star Trek philosophy in some parts. But if I look at the TOS, it definitely for me is the one that I would not go to. Definitely the motion picture, I really enjoy Undiscovered Country. You know, so there's definitely those that are above Final Frontier. So I can agree that it is the bottom out of those movies. So I think it's justified in talking about that with it being the worst of TOS. However, I 100% disagree that Nemesis is the worst of the TNG movies. I would put Insurrection and Generations at the bottom way before Nemesis. Like, there's times when I actually prefer Nemesis over First Contact. You can send me the hate mail later. I love...
Stunned silence follows.
I love Nemesis. I think there is so much good in it. There's so many good themes, and I just, the action and the philosophy and the characters, and I really do love everything about Nemesis just as much as I love everything about First Contact. So I find it difficult that we're lumping this as one of the worst TNGs, and I completely disagree. You're going to hear it over and over again. I apologize, but that is how I feel.
And it's great to have that different perspective because you don't hear that much, right? So that's good. And also, I mean, we're putting it in as the worst just based on like generally accepted ratings, but I hear what you're saying, and I'm going to structure this in a way that we're going to try to bring out the good things as well in both of them. So Haley, your general thoughts.
Oh, geez, you're going to follow Amy. Oh, boy.
Thought it might be interesting.
Maybe she should have been last.
Yeah. Overall, I can see both the negatives and the positives in both of these films. I think they both have things that generally most Trekkies and most people who watch the films don't like. I think there's generals that everyone can agree on in both of them. But for me, overall, if someone said, here, you've got to pick between these two films, which one would you watch? It's going to be 5 for me, just because there's too much in Nemesis that I don't like.
Okay.
But there's a lot that I do like, too, so.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, that's fair. Ken, your thoughts?
I really wouldn't want to be Haley right now.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because both kind of went down a similar trail. I'm aligned with Amy. I don't think Genesis. I don't know why that's on my head. Nemesis is the worst, but it's certainly not the best of the TNG movies. The Final Frontier is the worst of the original series movies. And it's funny, we've been talking a lot lately on Standard Orbit about Star Trek V. We had it was only 3 weeks ago, it was like Watching My Mom Fan Dance was the name of the title, which was a great title. But similar things happened for both movies, right? I remember going to the theater to see Star Trek V. Hopefully some of you guys have seen it in the theater, don't know. But it was 1989 at the time, and I just coming back from my honeymoon to go see it, and was really excited to see it because, you know, we just had the second season of TNG, and TNG was just really it was just starting to find itself. You had the 20th anniversary movie in Star Trek IV, huge, huge, huge success. And I'm thinking, you know, they're installing seatbelts. I didn't realize it was to keep us from falling out more than leaving the theater. But it was just a giant thud at the time, right? When I first saw it, I was so disappointed because my expectation was way, way up. And that is the same way I went to see Nemesis, the same expectations, because Insurrection was not a good movie in my book. It just really let me down. So I was thinking, okay, we're going to come back. We're going to get back into space. We're going to have a little action. We're going to have a plot line that has some substance to it. And a lot like Star Trek V, it had some great ideas, but the execution didn't work. And I was equally disappointed, especially because I love TNG and I love that crew. And I really wanted them to go out in style, you know, something spectacular like Star Trek VI. And it just didn't happen. So it's kind of funny. You look at both movies now and, you know, you'll look and you watch them. You see more positives than negatives, I think, than we did in the past. But, you know, for both movies to me were like, my expectations were so high. And maybe it wasn't realistic, but that's what they were at the time. And it just, they just didn't meet them.
Okay. Yeah, for me, so I didn't see Star Trek V when it came out in the theaters, or Nemesis. I saw them, you know, some years later. And I think my initial impression of Star Trek V was being very disappointed. I mean, I'd heard all the buildup, like, this is the worst one. And I was like, oh, this just confirms it. It's the worst. But more recently, I've gone back and watched it a couple of times, and I'm like, hey, there's some really good stuff that I'm really enjoying in here. It's probably still the worst, but I'm appreciating this more. And actually, the same thing happened with Nemesis, which Amy will be happy to hear about. I would never put it over First Contact, but I found a lot more to enjoy and appreciate in that movie when I've watched it more recently, and I think we can get into that. Actually, what I want to start out with, since we're talking about this as the worst, and I'm sure we'll get into the stuff that we don't like about it, I want to start with something a little bit different. The first thing I want to start with is to go around and ask everybody something that they love about Nemesis. So, Zach, you want to start?
Sure.
I know it may be a challenge.
That was a pregnant pause.
I hope he doesn't say the credits.
Oh, no. You know what? I really like Brent Spiner singing Blue Skies. You know, he's actually a very good singer. He's got some couple albums that I enjoy. That was cool to see Data sing. I like... I'm not kidding, guys. This is hard.
I don't want to spit my water out.
All right, it's okay if it's just one small thing.
Well, okay.
I just wanted to try to start out with something.
No, you're right. I do like the moment when they're all remembering Data at the end, and they're like to absent friends, which kind of calls back to Star Trek III. But also, it's a very human moment, and you feel sorry for the characters in the fact that Riker is struggling to remember what Data was whistling, you know? And for me, that scene actually really struck me, because I'm like, you know what? That's true, that they don't go rewatch their adventures like we do, right?
It's been 15 years, right?
How is he going to remember? He's like, what was that whistle? What was that tune? I can't remember it. I'm like, man, and it just felt like an uneasiness to it all. Like, man, that strung very true to me. Even though I didn't like how Data died, I did like the aftermath of it with the characters. They were truly shocked and just didn't know what to do with themselves. And I, you know, and as silly as it is and ridiculous, I do like them finding B4. Like, when Data's like, it appears to be an arm. And Worf's like, it's very astute. And even B4's like, why does the tall man have a furry face? And all this silly stuff. It's stupid. It's silly stuff. But I did laugh at it. So, I mean, it got its job done. So those little moments. And, you know, I end up being a little facetious with my crazy pauses trying to think of it. I mean, and the score, right? Jerry Goldsmith again. Great score. You know, he always delivered with Star Trek. He never phoned it in. So I believe that was another win for Goldsmith. And this being his fifth Star Trek score to do, and just as good as the rest. So yeah, those are, you know, when you ask me that question, that's what comes to mind.
Okay. No, that's excellent. Richard, what do you love about Nemesis?
Every single part of the entire movie when Wes is not there.
Well, you know, that's almost all the movie.
Yeah, I know. That's like all the movie. I mean, practically. I mean, no. I'm going to have to go with that, what Zach was saying, the scene where they're remembering Data. Honestly, First Contact, you know, what we were saying, it brings a tear to your eye. This one really did. For me, it did. And it was like, oh, man. That's heavy. And, it's by far one of my favorite scenes. So, or at least that is, even though it's a sad scene. So I would say the battle, but no. But yeah.
Excellent. Well, Haley, you've had a few minutes to think about this. Tell us what you love about Nemesis.
I think one of my favorites is the dune buggy in space. I know some people rag on it, but really when you think about it, why would you not have something? Why are we always walking? Like, you land and they're always walking. Like, it's always like, and it's not just like a short distance. It's always like super
like
far.
Kilometers.
Like, really? Why would we not have something that would get us there faster? Like, if we can't transport in exactly where we want to go, why? So I love that. I think that's, and I do enjoy Picard's best man speech. I think that's probably so heartfelt for the cast and crew. Those are probably my favorite moments.
Oh, excellent. Amy, you'll just have to keep it to a couple things for this part.
Oh. I know. I was like, man, what do I narrow it down? Okay, I will try to be quick.
No, you can say more about what you love later. It's just a couple things now.
Okay, well, I'm surprised. Guys, I love the whole theme and the whole idea and the whole philosophy of being better than who you are. I love that. That to me is so essential Star Trek. I love the interplay between Shinzon and Picard, and then that's paralleled with Data and before. Like how people keep missing that, and maybe they miss it intentionally, and I don't know, but I love that parallelism that we see in the movie. And I love the bringing in of Romulans and then this different Remans, you know, and how that's interplaying between the juxtaposition that we've seen versus in the series and now to the movie and the Romulans actually coming to the Enterprise aid. I love that whole thing. I love Shinzon taking over the Romulan Council. I love... Oh, gosh. I love, of course, the Troy and Riker and their wedding and then the interplay that they're going to have on Beta Zed and where, yes, we will all be naked and it's not appropriate and I'll be in the gym. And
I was waiting for that scene later.
And you've got the bridge, Mr. Troy. I mean, just...
Mr. Troy is good. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many good things. I love how Troy comes back and finds the scimitar through her telepath. Like, she's taking that, she's twisting it, she's using it to her advantage, and that really shows her strength. I love the score. It's amazing. It's all very, very, very good. I love the scorpions when they're going through and, you know, Data and Picard are escaping the scimitar. I totally love that. I love the battle in the nebula and they realize, oh, our uplink to Starfleet's being distracted. And then that's when they know they're going to get hit. I love when Data flies over and saves Picard. All right.
I think you should have limited it.
Save some for
minutes.
Ken and me.
Yeah. I know. Well, you should have gone. You should have put me last.
Well, thanks for the movie synopsis. I do appreciate it.
Amy loves the Wikipedia entry of Star Trek.
No, it's great. I mean, I love your enthusiasm for it, Amy, because that's a perspective we may not have gotten with anyone else who's on here. So, okay. So, Ken, something you love about Nemesis.
I'll keep it moderate. A couple of things that I did like. I thought the opening scene in the Romulan Senate was pretty powerful and scary, and that it was going to it started off really well, and that kind of lifted the expectations pretty high. From that point on, the music was pretty good, and I thought the score played well. I thought that the Enterprise E, you know, the aesthetics of the movie was pretty solid. You know, a lot of the things that Amy was talking about, I could see how people could enjoy it and like it. You know, everybody has a different lens on things. I guess as a lot of the things that you were starting to talk about, Amy, in my head, I'm going, and this is why I don't this and don't that. And then it's not right. It's just, I don't know why we have to be antagonistic of these things. But, you know, overall, like I said in the beginning, there was a lot of good ideas in some aspects. There was also a lot of poor execution. But I thought the best scene in the whole thing, to me, was the space battle in the nebula. I thought it was great looking. It was you didn't have those kind of effects too often in Star Trek. And, you know, not that I always live for the battles, but that was a pretty good one. And when the other ship showed up and even ramming the ship, I thought the effect was pretty cool. I don't know if that can actually happen in space. It's another question, but it still was a great scene. So, yeah, there's you know, it's like Darth Vader. There's good in him.
Yeah, well, actually, you guys have named a lot of things. I actually won't add anything else because I think you guys covered a lot of what I actually... We'll talk about more of what I'm
sure Amy could add some more.
I do have issues with it, which we'll talk about, but no, that covers it. So what I wanted to do to give it some equal time before we really get a little more into the comparison is talk about the Final Frontier and the things that you guys love about it. So maybe we'll go in reverse order. So Ken...
Well, I like the dynamic of the big three and the family element of the whole movie. I think that they played that very, very well. It was probably the best part of it. You know, the camping scenes, both at the beginning and at the end, I thought were pretty solid. The effects were not good, but there was we talked about in our episode not that long ago that. I really loved the lounge, and I loved the scene that took place there when they were talking about the pain and so forth. So, I thought Lawrence Luckenbill did a great job in portraying Cybok. I thought his acting was phenomenal, and they had some really good elements of the film in terms of how they captured certain scenes, sunsets, the horse riding scene in the beginning. I think that's kind of the two things that are very similar about the movies. They both started out really, really well, so your anticipation was really built up. So, and the music in this movie, phenomenal.
Haley, what are your thoughts on the things you love about Star Trek V?
You know, kind of agreeing with Ken, I love the family aspect of it. I enjoy that. Yeah. Oh gosh. There's too much in it. I love the camp scenes. I know everyone just rags on it and stuff, but I love that camp scene at the end. I think that's one of my favorite endings for one of the films. That moment right there for me is one of them that seals it.
All right. Excellent. Amy, things you like about The Final Frontier?
I really, really enjoy the don't take away my pain and that whole idea that that's what Cybok is doing. I'm not quite sure I buy into how he's doing it and stuff, but I mean, I look at, you know, painful things that have happened in my life and how I respond and yeah, don't take away my pain. I like that theme that it brings up in the movie. That's probably my favorite thing from The Final Frontier. I like the camping scenes, and definitely this is a movie that's Kirk, Spock, and Bones completely. And I like that, you know, Kirk is well, I'm going to die alone. And, oh, I thought I was going to die. Well, you weren't alone, you know? So that sort of interplay that you see, the relationship between those three is very strong as well.
Okay. Richard, things you love about Star Trek V.
But like, I mean, this, one of the, just like I'm echoing everyone, basically, I love the, I need my pain scene. That's one of my favorite scenes out of all of it. I mean, it's very, to me, it's very Star Trek-y, sort of. Like, you wouldn't be the person that you are without it. And to remove it would just basically, you know, like, you're like Data, you delete your, you know, dating protocol. I mean, it's just, you have to have it in order to make those kind of decisions for the person that you are. So, I mean, that scene is my favorite. I also love the camping scene. I really wish there are times when I'm camping with my daughter and I make jokes like that and she's like, huh? So it's like, oh, you need to watch more Star Trek.
You try to roast some marshmallows with her, is that?
Yeah. Well, yeah, she didn't even understand what I'm saying. They're marshmallows, Dad. I know. So it's like, all right, fine, whatever. I'll just leave it there. So, but yeah, those are by far my favorite scenes out of that whole entire movie. So,
okay. And Zach, things you love about The Final Frontier?
Yeah, to reiterate what most of y'all mentioned, the I need my pain scene. That's one of my favorite scenes in Star Trek. That's like a life lesson that I learned from Star Trek, or like I keep with me from Star Trek. Like you think about, like, what are things you take from this franchise? And then that's a great one. Like, I need my pain, right? The things that make us who we are, the things we carry with us. And that is so true. You know, so that is like an existential truth from this film. So that anything that has to do with Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, you know, you put these three guys together, the three characters, three actors in any situation, I'm going to love it. You know, them camping is great. When they're in the brig, it's great. When they're around the ship, you know. When they're on the planet at the end, you know, what does God need with the starship, right? That's an iconic line. You know, people will say that, and a lot of people know what you're talking about. Like, you could see that on a t-shirt. You know, what does God need? I'm going to go find a t-shirt that says that and buy it soon, if it exists. I love that. And, you know, there are some weird things to get to those certain scenes and moments, okay? Like, I don't ignore that. But when you're in them, you enjoy them. And even the side characters, you know, like Chekhov, a little moment, right? But he gets to be captain for, you know, a scene or two. So that's cool. And, you know, Scotty, I guess I have a thing for just stupid humor in these movies. I don't mind when he hits his head on the thing. I thought it was funny. He's like, I know the ship like the back of my hand. He hits his head, he falls over. I'm like, Scotty, that's ironic. But I don't know. It's just little moments. And I do very much enjoy the film overall, even though I do rank it last in the TOS movies.
Okay. I want to add a couple of things. I mean, this builds a little bit, but I've come to really love the humor in the movie. I mean, there's some hilarious stuff in Star Trek V that every time just gets me really laughing, and I love that. But one of the things that I really like is that, like, in a certain way, Cybok is presented as the villain of the movie, but really, in the end, he's somebody that is trying to help other people and sacrifices himself to save other people. So he's really not evil or like one-dimensional or like a villain. And I like that there's that kind of layering to his character. I especially enjoyed that the last couple of times. It's not like this is pure evil that's going to like try to kill you to the ends of the earth, you know? So.
No, that's a great point about Cybok, because he is not an evil guy with a doomsday device, right? He's a guy with a mission, which, you know, comes into conflict with other people in his way. But ultimately, he's trying to do a great thing, and he's an antagonist, but he's not a villain. And he has a different philosophy, and that's why he comes to conflict with the other characters.
Yeah. Well, and what I enjoy as well is that it's like he has this mission, and he's going to take the means he needs to get past the galactic barrier and to find, you know, Shakari. But as soon as he does, he's like, Captain Kirk, now I need you to command this and let us know what to do. And I love that, because you would never see that in a one-dimensional villain where it's like, I'm going to kill you, you know?
What are you talking about, so. Justin?
Well, maybe. Hmm. But there are other villains that have their obsessions. Yes, Khan. Okay. so, all right. But no, I thought it would be really interesting to talk first about the things that we might love about these two movies that are considered to be the worst. So the next thing I wanted to talk about was the story of the two movies. And so kind of talking about them, whether you like where they go, with the story, or whether could have been better executed. I mean, I'm sure we might say that for some of these, but just kind of general thoughts on the story. So Haley, let me start with you on this one.
Oh, okay. you know, yeah, I have issues with the whole overall story. I agree with what Amy was saying earlier about, like, you know, being the best we can be and being a better self and better version of ourselves. But at the same time, I really just don't buy the whole Shinzon clone of Picard, younger, genetically gonna advance age 30 years in like the blink of an eye. No, like.
So you have a problem with like the whole premise of,
yeah,
of Nemesis?
I mean, I enjoy the fact that, like, you know, it's the Romulans that wanted to do this whole, and that very first when he's telling Picard about why they created him, that is really great. But then afterwards, it just, that loses me. And yeah, with five, I get that people don't like that this is a story about God and religion and all that stuff. But if you watch a lot of TOS episodes, and even some later episodes in TNG, there still is that element of religion in Trek, whether it's overt or it's very quiet and you don't really notice it unless you're really paying attention. So with that, that story I can believe and agree with more than the overall story of Nemesis. Sorry, Amy.
All right. Well, Amy, maybe I'll go with you next.
All right.
I remember to talk about both.
It was a hard time holding that in. Okay. Okay. So Final Frontier, when I watched it, I didn't understand the story at all. Like, I couldn't follow it. I was like, okay, so here's Cybok, and he's trying to get to Shakari because he believes that it's the god or something.
He's had a vision that's where he's supposed,
yeah,
to go.
Yeah, and so he's gonna take over this planet and bring in a Federation starship to go get it. Like, it didn't even make sense. And then don't get me started about this Klingon that has absolutely nothing to do with any of this. Like, it's like a subplot. And then all of a sudden it's God, but then it's not God. Like, the story got me so confused. I liked the little gems and the, yeah, don't take away my pain. What does God need with it? I get the whole God thing. I liked that part, but the story that gets us there is completely not well told, not well thought out. And it just, I was lost from the very beginning, where you've got Cybok coming up to this bald native person of this planet. And that whole thing, Kirk said it, he's a charlatan. Like, what are you doing? What is this psychic? What are you trying to do? And how am I reliving my pain? And what is it what powers do you have? Is this the Vulcan mind meld or something? Like, it just didn't make any sense for me on that.
Okay.
Final Frontier.
But we know that maybe you don't even have to say it, the story of Nemesis works for
perfect.
You.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So, and I was thinking, like, we've seen, yeah, God stories a lot. It seems to be a trope, but like with Nemesis, have we seen a clone? And to me, Shinzon is very,
yes.
Okay, we have.
Multiple times, yeah.
Okay, well, okay. Well, not in a movie. But, like, Shinzon, I mean, he's got the support of, you know, this underclass that we know as Romulans and Remans. So he's got that support. He's being, you know, he just brings up his people. He overthrows Romulus. And now he's going to overthrow the Federation. Like, it's very grandiose. Yes, it's very villainous. But to me, it works. And then to add this layer that he's a clone. So, yeah, he's not really human. He's not really Reman. Like, what is he? And he's curious to know his history, as I think so many of us are. And so I really think that that story is so believable. And then you've got, yeah, his secondaries telling him, why are you delaying? Let's get going. We need to go, you know, but his curiosity for Picard is just so strong. I mean, sort of like the Khan character, he gets obsessed with Picard, you know, just as Khan gets obsessed with Kirk. And so it sort of derails the whole situation. It's similar. And so I think the story in Nemesis totally makes sense to me, and I don't see any holes or flaws in it.
All right, then. So I'm going to go to you next, Zach, but I think you had some news that you've been able to find that shirt.
Yeah, so I was looking online. I was listening to everything you were saying, by the way.
Right.
But while you were talking, I did find the What Does God Need with a Starship shirt. I'm going to look into it after we're done podcasting here. And maybe I'll get you all a t-shirt. We'll see. So
Patreons, we need your support.
I expect you all to wear it at Star Trek Las Vegas this year. So, Amy,
so yeah, Zach, your thoughts on the stories?
Yeah, so Amy, I can speak a little bit to what you're saying. I do understand, like, the whole, like, be better than you are. That is what it means to be human. That's a good message, like, out of this context of this movie. The problem is, though, like, Shinzon cannot survive without killing Picard and getting all his blood. So, but to me, that kind of, like, nullifies the whole conversation. Like, and you know, maybe there's a different way to look at it, but for me, like, well, he's either going to die or he's going to kill Picard and take all his blood. Also, he decides to go destroy Earth, which makes no sense. He should want to destroy Romulus because they're the ones that screwed him over, not Earth. Earth, I mean, he just happens to be human because the Romulans cloned Picard and he grew up on... You can have a counterpoint. Go ahead.
Yeah, but he's already taken control of Romulus. Like, he's already got control of the Senate. So, like, that's already happened. So he's already in control. So,
but why would he go destroy Earth?
Because of the Federation and the backstory that we have with the history between Romulans and the Federation. Like, it just
but he hates
sense.
Romulans. So why does he care? I mean, that's a pitfall for me.
Okay.
Because it's like, we got to destroy Earth in every single movie, even the JJ movies. It's like, we got to watch out. We're going to Earth. I'm like, can we stop? Can we just have an adventure in space? So that's an issue for me. The whole, like, and you know what? I don't mind that Tom Hardy shaved his head as Shinzon, you know, and looks like a Reman. It's like, okay, cool. He identifies with these people, so he's going to look like them as much as he can, shave his head. That's fine. Huge problem. Talk about retcons. Talk about retcon in the last episode. We have a picture of Picard of the Academy. And he's shaving head. It's like, that is such, like, okay.
And that's Tom Hardy in the picture, right?
Yeah, it's Tom Hardy in the picture. And it's like, literally, they could have turned to the cameras. Like, it's everybody paying attention? Did everybody get that? Is it the same guy? Like, Picard didn't go bald until, like, way later in life. I mean, we've even seen that on screen.
He could have had a shaven head year at the Academy.
It's like,
but still, it's clearly Tom Hardy.
Yeah, so that's very distracting as well. So it's just little things like that. Again, the way they handle Data, why did we have to kill him, you know, with B4?
I don't understand this argument either. Final sacrifice. That is what... Okay, I'm sorry. I'll stop.
No, it's fine. But this movie, and you say it's very similar to Star Trek 2. You're right. It's a ripoff of Star Trek 2 because we have the main villain who's been cast out on this side planet and his revenge built up in his heart and soul for years, right? He gets command he of another ship, uses it to fight, you know, his obsession captain guy in a nebula where nobody else can come help him. Meanwhile, you know, we have Data putting his Katra into B9 so he can survive after he sacrificed himself at the end. You know, I'm just like, it's very A to B, and it just invites those comparisons, and that's the problem. You know, like, if it were more different, I wouldn't say, you know what, I've seen this all before and it was better then.
But the battle has four ships instead of two.
Oh, you got me there, Justin. so that's my thing. And then you know what, here's another random thing, since we're talking about things, but like, why is Worf here, right? First contact, Worf, brilliant way to bring him in. He's on the Defiant. Yeah. It was, that ship was built to fight the Borg. It makes sense. Richard has brought his headgear back from the last episode. But that makes perfect sense for Worf to be there. And then all this stuff is going down in First Contact. He just becomes part of the crew. Insurrection, I do applaud them for just them completely, like, ignoring it. He's like, Mr. Worf, what the hell are you doing here? He's like, well, actually, oh, excuse me. And like, he gets cut off. I laugh at that. Apparently, I just realized how much I like the stupid humor in these Star Trek movies, I guess, when we've had these conversations. But Nemesis, right? Deep Space Nine had established he's going to go be an ambassador with Martok on Kronos. I'm like, that's cool. Deep Space Nine is so much great character development with Worf. And next time we catch up with him, he's just getting drunk at the wedding, manning the cat tactical station. I'm like, well, can we have some
explanation?
I don't
think diplomacy was the thing for Worf, and he just went back to what he was doing. But it is a step back for his character.
Well, yeah,
and
I'm sure he was invited to a wedding.
Oh, I see.
I was just about to say that.
Well, hey, take that with the orb, okay? We're the standard orb here. We have no dog in that fight, right? So it's like, okay, and then we have Wesley show up at the table for 5 minutes. I'm like, whoa, what? I thought he was off to be a traveler. What is he doing here?
Yeah,
I understand
that
he's there.
I delete that scene in my head. I'll give you that.
So, like, I understand why he's there for the fans. Like, oh, look, it's Wesley. Being as they are, the fans of Wesley, right, Richard? But I don't know. So all these little things and
okay, you have problems with
so there
the
we go. I'm sorry. That's
okay.
My take. Don't want to go off on a rant there, but
that's your take. But you know, I've asked everybody else. So what about Star Trek V?
Star Trek V is perfect. There's nothing wrong with it.
Oh my gosh.
Okay.
Amy's head just exploded.
No. Right. Thank you for getting back on track, Justin. Thank you. Star Trek V, there are problems with it. The Klingon subplot is nothing. It's as generic as can be. The whole plot with the ambassadors on Nimbus 3 is kind of like, here's a huge plot hole. He needs a ship to come to Nimbus 3. Didn't they not just drop off a Romulan ambassador like 5 minutes before? There's a plot hole for you. The special effects are very weak in Star Trek 5. It's not a deal breaker for me, I guess, because, you know, look at the original series special effects, right? But yes, there's a huge step down from all the other Star Trek films. The humor does, although I do laugh at it, like, it seems to me they learned the wrong lesson from Star Trek IV. Like, oh, they love humor? Well, let's put more jokes in. Because Star Trek IV was a fish out of water. It was organic. Star Trek V is more manufactured humor. And then even the climax of everything is cheap. You know, let's be honest about it. Like, they had grand plans of all these things, of rock monsters and all that. But ultimately, it's, you know, after Cybok, which I, you know, feel like is a nice end to his character. He sacrifices himself to save the other ones because he realizes the error of his ways and all that, how he's going to, you know, lead these guys into trouble. But then after that, we have like this overhead projector alien floating around shooting lasers. And it's not impressive, you know. So those are some weak spots.
And he's doing all these weird moaning noises like, ooh.
It's so weird. And then you get random stuff like Uhura and Scotty. Like, where did this come from?
Yeah.
That's weird. And then making Sulu and Chekhov look like really inept. Like, oh, we just got lost in the forest here. Like, little stuff like that. Unnecessary. So, yeah. So Star Trek V has its problems as well. It's equally opportunity complaints here. So there you go.
Okay. All right. Richard, your thoughts on the stories of the two movies?
Man, I don't even feel like I need to say anything. I mean, pretty much... they just covered everything. I'm like, yeah, they're good TV or they're good movies. Yeah, no. honestly, I really think that they're a mismatch to compare because I see them as two different movies. I mean, I've always seen as the Final Frontier as a more of a Star Trek movie than a lot of the ones that are out there. Nemesis was, I'll go with Zach. It is kind of a ripoff of The Wrath of Khan, but at the same time, it's more action and all that. Whereas, like, the movie that shall not be named is probably more comparable to The Final Frontier, mainly because of, you know, its inner reflection more than anything else. That's all I really have to add to it because you guys already basically covered everything. So it's like, all right, never mind.
Sorry, I went too long. I'm sorry.
That's all right. A lot of interesting points.
Zach never does that on Standard Orbit.
Yeah, no.
Ken and I have been doing a podcast with just two people for a long time, so you got to fill up time. All right, you understand?
We still go an hour and a half. Yeah, it's incredible.
So Ken's been waiting very patiently. Your thoughts on the stories of the two movies?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll start with The Final Frontier first. It was, you know, Shatner came up with it, the whole God subject. It got watered down tremendously from what he really wanted to do, which would have been extraordinarily controversial, but it probably, you know, would probably be having much more discussions about it. I think the times that this movie was made, you know, you had a lot of cults going on. You know, you had Jim Jones, Branch Davidians, you know, you name it, going on at that time, and I found that they took it in a more Star Trek direction. I felt that as much as it didn't execute, it kind of fit Star Trek, and Nemesis doesn't. And I can kind of summarize that a little bit better. Nemesis has all these little plot points all over the place that never really add up. It was a string of vignettes that they put together to try to come up with a movie, and it didn't execute well. That's how I look at it. And if they wanted to make it a real Star Trek movie, the principal piece, when I thought it was a great scene, by the way, is when Shinzon and Picard are having dinner, right? Because we don't know really what's going on here. And they talked about, you know, going in another direction and the possibility of, you know, I thought it was a great conversation. I was into it. And there was a part of me that was saying, okay, if this was real Star Trek, Shinzon would align with Picard and they'd fight a common enemy, whatever that was. And that's not what happened. They took it to the whole revenge thing. I've seen it 1,000 times. It wasn't believable. It was ridiculously slow. I mean, if he needed Picard to live, he only had 27 chances to get him before he escaped. And that's why it was like, it just didn't work. And the whole thing with B4, I hated it because it just didn't make Data's sacrifice worthwhile. They had a backup there the whole time. It was poorly performed. And, you know, they completely just destroy and break the Prime Directive when they go down to that planet. As much as you like the Dune buggy, I've never seen an away party go down there and just go, oh, just shoot them. Screw it. They're chasing us. It's a pre-warp society. We're on their planet. But you know what? Just kill them. Okay, that's there was not a lot of Star Trek in Nemesis. There was a lot of Star Trek in The Final Frontier. Neither one executed very well, in my opinion. But that was the most frustrating thing, because I get very emotional about Nemesis because I wanted that movie to be the send-off. And the plots and, like I said, all the little vignettes that they put together in Nemesis just made it a mess. The poor execution, the plot lines in The Final Frontier, it wasn't as much of a mess, but it was messy because they couldn't, you know, whether it was the acting or whatever, in both movies too were weak. It wasn't their best stuff on either cast, in my opinion. So, you know, I'm not saying which one is worse or better or whatever. It just both movies were frustrating for me. And that's, I guess you can surmise that from my conversation here.
Very interesting. Well, I have a couple of thoughts about the story. So for Star Trek V, like I said, I mean, I think there are things that I like. I like the humor. I like, you know, the arc of Cybok and all of that stuff. But like at the very beginning of the movie, when you see like there's all this drama about Cybok and this guy and he's going to take his pain, unfortunately, I actually laugh at that because it just seems like so overdone. And there's a lot of things within Star Trek V that seem kind of overdone, and especially in the God scene, some of the things at the end. So I feel like there was great ambition there. And I love like the core of it that's about how you deal with your pain and how that affects your life. And all of those kinds of things are great. But I thought that it was kind of, yeah, just poorly executed. But I do love, you know, like the camping scenes and all that kind of stuff, I think is really great. But I was just disappointed by a lot of it in the execution. I feel like the stuff on Nimbus 3 is just kind of silly. Like, okay, you know, Kirk and Spock and McCoy are going to get some horses and storm in and hope they can, you know, get those ambassadors back. I don't know. There's just a lot of stuff in there that doesn't work for me. Like Nemesis, I feel like that there's actually some strong stuff. It's interesting to see like more of Romulus and the Romulans and the Remans and all of that stuff. And I think they're building up to something that's interesting. And even though, you know, Shinzon doesn't really look like Picard, like if I get past that, it is interesting to think about how your formative experiences affect you and how where you grow up, even if you have the same DNA, can completely affect your life. I really love that stuff. And I think there's a lot of really great things. I wish they would have done more with someone like Dinatra, that's like a really sympathetic Romulan. So I think there's a lot of good things, but it just, yeah, it does get a little silly with how Shinzon keeps trying to get Picard and he slips through his fingers and all that stuff. And I have quite a few problems with it, but there is actually a lot that I enjoy. I mean, maybe I don't like it as much as Amy, but maybe more than you guys do. But it's interesting to talk about because there's definitely problems with these stories, but I think we can find things that we really, really like about them as well.
Can I ask you guys about a couple of missed opportunities that I thought if you guys thought you might have liked to have seen these. I think in Nemesis, right, is the Romulans, finally, right? At least we thought, and then became more the Remans. So the Romulans get screwed again because they were supposed to be in Star Trek 3, and they got changed to Klingons, et cetera, et cetera. But if you're going to be on Romulus, Spock, could we have seen Spock at some point? You know, he's supposed to be there doing something. We could have seen Sela, you know, maybe Tomalak. Like, any, would you guys have liked to seen any of these Romulan characters pop up, or would you have thought that that's just too reaching back too far at this point in the movie franchise for characters?
Yeah, I think with the time frame, it just would have been too much fan service, and I don't think I would have appreciated it.
That's interesting.
I don't know. I think it would, like, at least, oh, sorry. I kind of like that idea. It doesn't have to be like an entire plot, surrounding them, but just like a mention, like, oh, the, you know, in the time of Sela, you know, we lost our way, sort of thing, or whatever. You know, I actually like that idea, that he would call back to the past of Romulus. So yeah, that's interesting. Hmm. Yeah, I like that.
What do you think about that idea, Haley?
Yeah, I'm kind of more with Amy. I don't think that it would have added anything to the story in itself, having any of those characters, and I'm not talking about Sela.
Fair enough. Ken, is that something you would have liked to have seen?
I don't think it would have been able to work if you had been watching Deep Space Nine and the Romulans were fighting the Dominion at the time. There was a lot of stuff that happened between when Sela was in it, Tomalak, all of those guys go way, way back. So, you know, I keep thinking of all those destroyed, you know, Romulan ships in season 7 of DS9.
they're on those, right?
Yeah, they could have been. You know, and even that whole Reman piece about being used as cannon fodder and all that stuff would have been more interesting to kind of go down that road a little bit more to kind of understand how the Romulans participated. But, you know, you kind of got the feeling at the end of DS9 that, you know, they were coming together a little bit more. And so I think if you brought back those characters, it would have been more of a leap. Just from a continuity, you know, Star Trek being on a linear line, right? No alternates and all that crap. To me, it wouldn't have worked very well. So, you know, and from Amy's perspective, it's just like, if the movie's perfect, don't mess with it.
Why change it?
Why change it?
So. I guess the main one I was thinking of would be Denise Crosby coming back. If this is going to be the last TNG movie, she could have been the Dinatra role. You know, Sela could have been that character. Like, to me, that's a very easy switch. The other ones I see, it gets kind of complicated and, like, you know.
But how many people really liked that role? I don't find a lot of fans liked her in that.
I hated it. I don't mind it too much, but, like, I mean, she was showed to be pretty inept with what happens in Unification.
Yeah, she would have been executed by the Romulans after two major fails.
Yeah. But I want to talk about it for a minute because, Zach, I think one of the things that could have been interesting and one of the things that I've wanted to see since Unification was to see, like, the progress of the work that Spock would do there and actually coming close to that actual unification and what that would have, I don't know how exactly it would have been framed, but I would have liked to see that movie. And actually, I know I mentioned the novels a lot, but it continues in the novels. Spock is doing his work on Romulus. And of course in 2009, he's still there by 2387. But I think that could have been an interesting element because like that, I felt like there was that whole potential of the unification between the Vulcans and the Romulans and how that would just change everything in the quadrant and how there would be the opportunity for just, I don't know, greater understanding or so. I'm not a movie writer, but I like the idea. It sounds like most other people don't, but.
Well, it's too bad. Both Romulus and Vulcan are gone, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
they're not both gone in the same universe.
Yes. Well done, well done.
Like one is gone.
Well,
Romulus
is gone in the Prime universe.
Yeah,
right. And Vulcan's gone in the Kelvin universe.
Mm-hmm. So there'll be no unification. Sorry, guys.
Well, you know, I was just hoping for a nemesis, like there's unification, and unfortunately, 8 years later, Romulus blows up. So,
yeah, and not to tease you, Justin, but that's where I was going, right? If there was a way that Shinzon would have aligned, that would have been Star Trek. That would have been the essence of Star Trek, with the villain being more sympathetic, going in a direction you don't expect instead of the typical trope. And so I agree with you. This movie lost a great opportunity.
I would like to see that, Ken.
I thought Nemesis was perfect.
That was... No. It's just fine. But adding that twist, I agree with Ken, you know? It would even take it a step further higher than it already is.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen the Viceroy rebel, and then it becomes a battle for the right reasons.
That would have been really interesting, actually.
I agree.
Yeah.
I like it.
And I think the first time I saw Nemesis, I thought maybe that's where they were going, because Shinzon seemed like he was kind of a little more sympathetic or curious, but no, he had to just go for it all the way. So it's interesting you talk about missed opportunities, Zach, for Nemesis. Like, what do you think were the missed opportunities for Final Frontier?
Well, you could have gone anywhere after Star Trek IV. You had a new ship, blank slate, right? But then they kind of immediately, like, they could have picked up, like, kind of like Beyond picks up, like, hey, we're out in space doing our mission, right? Five could have been that, because they assumedly went on a new adventure after Star Trek IV. But instead, we're in space dock, the ship's broken, you know, stuff like that. I just, that's a pretty, I don't like that trope of like, yeah, the Enterprise doesn't work, right? I would like to see a fully
formed. That bothers
formed...
me a lot.
Yeah, me too.
Star Trek V. It's like, really, like, the Federation is not going to you know, have their ship up to specs when they send it out.
You got
to
have your ship together. We've said that a lot.
Quite yeah, true. Just because they needed Kirk doesn't mean they needed the Enterprise. Just put him on one of these other ships. It's the only ship in Rage. It's the only one we got. Like, that is such a bad trope of all the movies.
They didn't
say it was the only one in Rage. They said it's the only one with an experienced commander.
Yeah, because we can't just put him over on the Excelsior or something.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. There isn't like another ship like, oh, just send him over to the one that works. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because, like, I wish they had maybe done just more depth to the Klingon story. I don't know what that would have been, but like I said, it was just so generic. Like, you could have done something more with that. And Spock having a brother never really bothered me. You know, I know a lot of people are like, if you just take that out, it's like, oh, well, it's way better. I'm like, well, why? I don't really... we keep talking about retcons. It didn't really bother me, him having a brother, so...
No, what bothered me about it was that they took so long in the movie to reveal it. It's like... Mm-hmm. And when you're rewatching it, you're like, they're going to come to the point where he says it's his brother.
That's true. It's only like 30 minutes left or whatever.
Is it strange to all of you that just across all of Star Trek, right? And I know we're always watching a show with the main characters, but, you know, you have a bartender who's, you know, related to the president of this world, or it has to be Spock's brother versus a... I mean, for such a huge universe, it's really tiny.
Not as tiny as the Star Wars universe, though.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. But I mean, they do make it to be a small universe. I mean, one of the things that's interesting in First Contact is Picard says Federation is 150 planets across 8,000 light years, which is a huge distance. And we don't really see anything that's like all the way at the other end of the Federation and whatever is going on over there, because it's got to be quite different, right? And who knows how big it is in Kirk's time, but... I think that would have been interesting, something happening on the very edge of the Federation.
Well, we get that in Nemesis. They're right there on the Romulan border.
Yeah, but Romulus is not like 4,000 light years from Earth or the center of the Federation. I'm talking about something like way at the other end where you could see what's going on over there. Might have been interesting. So
I think in TOS they said it was 10,000 planets and growing.
Did they really?
Yeah.
Yeah, Space Central said that, Ken. I think the United Earth Space Probe Agency is 10,000 planets.
Whatever it was, but it was 10,000 planets and growing. So it was just interesting, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You mentioned missed opportunities, Justin. Mm-hmm. Special effects. That would be my answer. Yeah. I wish huge. ILM was available to do them.
Well, you know, I was reading about it, and was it that they weren't available, or for some reason they thought that ILM was... too expensive or something like that, but anyway, for whatever reason,
as I understand, they were working on Indiana Jones, And then the next warehouse was like working on like Ghostbusters 2, and then somebody else was working on Batman. So like you go down the list, there's like no one left to do the special effects, and they just found some guy that Shatner did a commercial with or something.
Yeah. I guess a question is like, would that have really made the movie a lot better? Because I mean, I think Nemesis has pretty good special effects and lots of people have problems with it, right?
That's an excellent point. I don't think it's a deal breaker, but it's like, it's just a culmination of all these things where it's like, well, this and the special effects are bad. You're like, oh, but you're right. Ultimately, like with all Star Trek, it comes down to the story. And can I say something about Nemesis though? I'm going to sing the praises of Generations here. The stellar cartography set, you know, was amazing in Generations. It's Cerebro before X-Men, Patrick Stewart, it all ties together, right? I mean, that's what it looks like. Big 367, this awesome chair and moving panels, display panel. And then you fast forward to Nemesis, and it's like some leftover room from the Voyager set that they redressed, you know, and it's very disappointing compared to what you saw in Generations. But hey, Star Trek V had the same problems. Like, they're on the Enterprise D. Like, they're running through the hallways of the Enterprise D. Engineering looks like the Enterprise D.
That's true, weren't those corridors modified from what was in the motion picture?
Damn, right, they were.
Yeah. So they started out as TOS corridors, so I can kind of be, but I'm a little distracted. I'm like, is Data going to walk down the hall or something?
Riker's going to come out of the door. Yeah.
Throw a few pipes out.
I think in Star Trek VI, Nicholas Meyer really hid and redressed the sets far better than Shatner did in mm-hmm. 5. So anyway, these movies all have very similar issues to them. But that's a stark comparison because that was such a big deal in Generations, because it's like, remember in Lessons, right, in TNG, where you see stellar cartography, it's a little room, right, with a little thing in the middle of it. And then we're like, oh gosh, we got a motion picture budget. We got this awesome set. And then 3 movies later, we're back to this little room with Picard and Data talking in it.
It still looked really, really beautiful, though. I mean, compared to what they could have done, I mean, they could have not shown it at all because, you know, why would you want to? So I was so glad that they actually included that in there. And to you, Justin, I was going to say something before Zach chimed in. You wanted to see something going on the other side of, you know, of Federation space. It's called the Gamma Quadrant, and the wormhole aliens don't let people in or out.
Wormhole aliens, you're a non-believer. The prophets.
Well, that's not technically the other side of Federation space, because it's not part of the Federation, but... Okay. Yeah, I know, I see. That could get dangerous. So I think we're at about an hour here. What I actually wanted to do was to go around and have everyone talk about something maybe they'd like to talk about that didn't come up before, and then we can go on to final thoughts. Does that sound good?
Sounds good.
All right. So, Richard, you've been a little quiet for a while. This is before we go into final thoughts, but is there something you wanted to mention that's been on your mind about these two movies we haven't talked about yet?
No, not really. I mean, I mean, I've said my piece. So, I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. Let me take that back. Amy and Zach have said my piece. And you know, I mean, really, the only thing I could really talk about in this movie is that, you know, I really feel that they're mismatched movies. I mean, be that as it may, that it might be ranked in the worst Star Trek movies from both series, but like, it's just, I mean, I feel that they're mismatched and they're kind of, and one's at a disadvantage to the other. So, so that's just what I think. And then on top of what Amy and Zach said too, you know, yeah.
Okay.
Copy and paste.
Okay. Amy, anything you'd like to mention that hasn't come up about these two movies so far?
Well, I think I did say that I like the score, but I'm going to mention it again. The score of Nemesis is so amazing. I love the opening when they're in the Romulan Senate. I love when Data's flying across. I mean, that is, it opens up Earl Grey is
it does. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I can listen to Nemesis over and over and over again. And it was funny when I was watching the Final Frontier and the end credits, you know, TOS, but that was the TNG theme song, you know? And so I'm like, oh, it's just so weird. Cause I always relate that to TNG, and here it is closing out the Final Frontier, but that's neither here nor there. But that's, you know, again, this dichotomy that I always have with that theme song, because I so associate it with TNG. So I really wanted to point out that the score is just amazing, amazing. The special effects you guys were talking about, incredible. Here we are, we're fighting this huge scimitar who's cloaked the majority of the time, and they're trying to find it, and the Romulan warbirds are coming and they're trying to find it, and just sort of the strategy that they have, you know, where Shinzon's like, bring in Denatra's ship in Velara, the Velara coming in closer, and then they get it on the underbelly. Like, that's just some really good strategic, you know, battles in space. I thought that was good. I generally don't pay that much attention to the, you know, the battles, like obviously some of you guys do. But I just thought it was so, so good. When you're seeing the Enterprise E, just her, she is beautiful, slick and going. And the scenes, like the space scenes, and you've got this beautiful, I mean, you don't call it a sunset, but you know what I mean? Like when they're going in space and you see, it's just like looking through the Hubble telescope, you know, like those type of pictures. Like those are some amazing, like I had a couple of them screenshot on my computer just because they're so beautiful. The special effects in Nemesis just really, really is good. I will say I don't like the Shinzon's number two and that Riker fight. That totally throws it off for me. And, you know, he's going down to the depths. Why do we have a catwalk? Why? We've never seen this before.
Why can you fall way down?
Yeah, you know, I didn't like that. But one thing with the Final Frontier, sort of similar, like when they're having to climb up and Spock gets those boots. Okay, enough with the boots. That totally took me out. And so then they rocket up. And I'm like, really? How many?
Fire the rockets.
So it's sort of the opposite. Deck 78. You know, they're flying up.
Twice.
And twice. Exactly. And I'm like, okay, there's too much vertical change within these ships that I just didn't, in both of them, I did not like either. I didn't think it was done well. So I think, yeah, that's about the things. Again, there's just so many good things about Nemesis.
I know. You could have your own Nemesis podcast every week.
So, yeah, those are a couple things I wanted to mention.
Okay.
Those excellent. Are good ones, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Ken, things you wanted to mention?
I think Amy captured most of it. I don't think there was anything more to mention, and maybe my synopsis went a little bit long. I will say that one of the things that we got out of Star Trek V that made its way onto Standard Orbit was the definition of hee-hee funny and ha-ha funny.
Classic.
It was classic, yeah.
Thanks.
Oh, I have one more. Can I just interject?
Yeah, go ahead.
So on the Final Frontier, again, more, I didn't understand this god character. Like, I didn't think we got any closure. Like, is he this alien? Is he person? Is he... Like, what is he, and why does he get destroyed, and how does he get destroyed? Because he gets shot? Is it a person?
Yeah. Does anyone know who's read the novelization, if it's explained?
I read the novelization and went through it somewhat recently, but it's an entity. It's an alien entity, which is also very Star Trek-ish, right? And I guess one of the things that should be mentioned, Cybok, you know, he's Vulcan, so he has telepathic powers or whatever. He was really hearing from this being and was really being pulled and being deceived and thinking that it was God, you know, that it was, Shakari, that's, you know, the Vulcan heaven and all of that other stuff. And he was being pulled in so that this thing could escape and do very bad things.
But how long has that entity been there? Is it like it just got there recently and found Cybok's mind, or it just got bored after a while?
Well, he has been in prison there for an eternity.
Yes, an eternity is all we hear.
So, Justin, you might get here at some point in your novel reading, but I believe they talk about this creature in the Q Continuum trilogy.
Yes.
I read that, and I didn't remember about that.
Do they talk about him in there?
Well,
I haven't read those books myself, but I was in an understanding, like, they mention him somewhere in one of these Q novels, so.
Oh, I thought about that, because I read it, because I was on Literary Treks, I read that trilogy, mm-hmm. But I didn't think that he was one of those characters because it didn't seem like he was powerful enough.
Okay.
So I made the connection. I was like, oh, yeah. And then I dismissed it saying that wasn't it because it didn't seem like the Final Frontier, like he was powerful enough, like one of those mentioning in the book.
You couldn't destroy one of the Q with just like
torpedo.
A photon torpedo. So.
And what was up with his beard? That was so Wizard of Oz lion. Well,
it was what the general acceptance of what God looks like, you know,
or a god. Yeah, whatever. Yeah,
it totally reminded me of the lion from Wizard of Oz, though.
It did. Yeah, it really did. Yes,
did have a lionish beard.
That was Admiral Murdoch, by the way.
Yes,
sorry, George Murdoch, Admiral Hanson.
Admiral Hanson. Yeah, Admiral Hanson.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, of course, now I've lost track, but I think we got Richard and Amy and Ken. So, Zach, things you want to add?
Yeah, I talking about the decks, I guess both these movies have problems with deck consistency, even First
What's
Contact.
What's the problem in Nemesis? Did.
Well, because, okay, so in First, it's kind of a First Contact problem, but becomes a Nemesis problem, because in First Contact, Lily's like, how big is this ship? He's like, well, it's 24 decks, right? And the security officer tells Worf, they control decks 26 up to 11. And then you go to Nemesis, and they're like...
Two secret decks.
Yeah. And then there's even more secret decks, because it's like, we have intruder alert on deck 29. I'm like, how big is this ship? Can we get some continuity here? But Star Trek 5, much
added
worse.
Decks.
Yeah.
I'm but like, yeah, but Star Trek, I mean, even if you take into account, like, maybe it could be big enough to have 78 decks, the top one should be one.
I agree.
Oh, yeah.
Egregiously worse. Egregiously
and,
worse.
And if you watch it, it's like it goes to 52, 64, and then 52, and then 77, 78, 78
again. Yeah,
those
numbers were not making sense in my head.
No. Absolutely unacceptable.
Oh, no, they're nobody's head except Bill Shatner.
Yeah. I ultimately didn't. The last thing I'll say here is like Shenzon's plot just didn't make sense to me because if you think about it, so many things had to happen so perfectly for to have it unfold as it did. Like, so they found B4 somewhere, they took him apart, they laid him on this planet, they set off his podrotronic transmitter. The Enterprise happened to be close enough to pick up on it. They go, they pick up piece by piece by piece. Luckily, they found them all.
Slaughter aliens.
Natives on the planet start shooting at him. They kill all them.
kill all them.
Patrick Stewart likes driving cars, so they gave him his Argo sports car to drive around.
He had a big smile on his face.
He did. That's the happiest I've ever seen Picard in my entire life.
And Data's a backseat driver.
Yeah, Data's a backseat. Dwarf has the giant cannon on the back. You know, if you go down to any pre-warp civilization, have your car with a giant cannon on the back. So then they put B4 together. Then they end up going to Romulus. B4 has to like hack all the data, then go to the Scimitar, and all this back and forth. There's a lot of a lot of variables that could have interrupted this plan. So anyway, it's just very convoluted, basically, with B4.
I can see that.
So it's convoluted. Cybok, hey, get a ship, go to the center of the galaxy. Very straightforward, you know? Not convoluted at all. Makes perfect sense to me. But ultimately, yeah, both these films fall short of what their aspirations were. Much like Shenzon fell short of the aspiration of being Picard. I don't know. I'm just trying to tie it together there. But I it's all Star Trek, right? So I do enjoy them all in various degrees. Based off both these conversations, I've had an interesting revelation that I like stupid humor in Star Trek movies. I guess I didn't realize I did so much. But anyway, yeah, it's the TNG crew. And... you know, I wish they had all got more to do. Dr. Crusher, again, has nothing to do. Like, what does she do in this movie? Because you might remember. Like,
yeah, she realizes Shinzon's problem and it explains it to us.
Oh, she got me on that one, guys. Yep. But okay, but yeah, but that's it. Like, she has that one scene of exposition, right? Like, just give her something else to do. And Gase McFadden's a good actress. But that's a TNG movie problem in general. So I would like to see more of that. But at least she didn't get, like, you know... do a fan dance or something like Uhura. So I'll take her having one exposition scene to whatever happens there in Star Trek 5. So yeah, I mean, we've all talked so much, we've all pretty much covered it. I think I just wanted to mention that completely convoluted Rube Goldberg style plan that Shinzon had.
Yep, I could see that.
Well, you were going point by point. I'm like, yeah. It sounds perfect to me.
Shinzon is just that brilliant a tactician.
He is. As we know, so, Picard is a great diplomat. Like, see, they're the same.
All right, so Haley, things you'd like to add?
Yeah, you know, and I talked about this before, but I think I think a lot of why Star Trek V suffers is because it's come off of Star Trek IV. Mm-hmm. So, and everyone else has kind of hit on some other stuff that I would, you know, talk about. I agree the Klingon subplot of Five is, it doesn't necessarily even need to be there. It could have not been there at all, or it could have been there but been more, and that would have added more to it. One thing with Nemesis, I wanted to hear squeaking sounds every time Shinzon moved or walked. Because his uniform looked like it would squeak every time he would move. Like it, I don't know.
It did squeak. You could hear it.
A little bit, but like, I mean, I wanted like full out like squeaking. I don't know. Because there just.
Wanted to hear that?
There wasn't. There wasn't enough. Humor doesn't have to be in everything. But at the same time, I don't know. There just needed to just be a little bit just to lighten stuff. I know we get it with kind of like the opening scene with the wedding and then Picard smiling ecstatically when he's driving the space buggy. But I don't know. That would have made it. That would have been great.
Okay. Well, before we get to all of our final thoughts and see which ones we'd prefer, I had a couple of things I wanted to add. So I think we talked about it a little bit, but in Star Trek V, I think the scene with McCoy where he's reliving what happened to his father and the terrible decision that he had to make is one of the best things scenes that you see for McCoy in anywhere that he's in Star Trek. And that one just always really stands out for me. It's really Absolutely. Powerful. Something else, a criticism that happens for Nemesis that we actually didn't talk about is the violation of Deanna Troi, which always bothers me. But something on top of that bothered me is so out of character for Picard is she's had this happen. You know, Shinzon's had this violation and she says, well, can I be relieved of duty? And Picard says permission denied. And then instead of saying something like, we're going to see what we can do to stop all of those assaults from happening so you don't have to withstand that and all of that, he actually says, if you can endure more of these assaults, I need you by my side now more than ever. That seems so incredibly out of character for Picard, and I hate that line. Mm. So agreed. We didn't mention that, but I just want to point it out because especially this time I was like, that is not what Picard would say. Like, oh, endure some more violations because I need it. You know,
yeah,
like,
it was very
then
selfish
he gets beamed away, but yeah.
Well, and then I think Marina Sirtis as the actress, though, saw that Troi ended up using that to their advantage at the end to find the ship. So that kind of justified it, like, as far as, and then Marina Sirtis has talked about it, you know, she didn't, that's, you know, where she, you know, uses it to their advantage at the end. But I 100% agree with y'all.
Because like, she's then violating cool. the mind of the Reman.
Yeah. No, but, no, yeah. I get it. But that connection ended up serving the plot at the end for them to find them. But I 100% agree with y'all. I do not agree with Picard's command decision there either.
I wouldn't use the word justify either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I think...
She got her revenge, but it wasn't justified.
Yeah, her going through it, in my opinion, okay, because, yeah, she does use it, and there is that connection, and she finally figures out how to, you know, flip the script on that. But Picard's reaction there really should not have been at all and part of the dialogue at all. Because it's not what he would have said or done.
But it's canon.
Goodness.
Yep.
He did it.
All right. So I think we've talked about a lot of things for these two movies, Final Frontier and Nemesis, but let's go around with final thoughts and see which one you prefer.
Oh, wait. So, no, it's which one is worse.
Which one is worse?
Because we did which one is best. I thought it would be which.
Oh, worse? Oh.
Yeah.
So you want to do which one is worse.
So we are saying the one we think is worse. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we can do it that way. So, Richard, how about you go first?
Oh, why do I have to go first?
Because you've been sitting back there not saying anything for a while.
I'm holding my tongue. I was like on some of that.
It's like watching Step Brothers watching Richard, right? Because you got the Wookiee mask, now you've got the Klingon mask coming off and on.
Okay. So, like I said before, and I've said twice now, and here's the third time, they're terribly unmatched.
But if you had to match them.
But if I had to match them, and we were choosing which one's the worst, I'm going to have to go with Nemesis.
Oh my gosh. We need a new co-host on Earl Grey. choosing Wrath of Khan yesterday and now choosing Nemesis right now. Oh my goodness. No, applicants, the reason why... please send in your resumes.
Amy, do you need your pain?
The reason why, I mean, don't get me wrong. I really like Nemesis. It's a really good film. I'm not saying that it wasn't the worst. Well, I guess I did. It's actually not the worst. So technically, it's not the worst. The film that will not be named is the worst for me. But if I had to choose out of these two, it would be Nemesis, mainly because The Final Frontier is a very Star Trek-y movie. Regardless if there's any plot holes about, in The Final Frontier, I mean, it is your classic Star Trek movie. I mean, they're talking about questions that, you know, that were in the series. I mean, in both TNG and also TOS. And it's just, to me, Nemesis is flair. That's all it is. It's just, oh, we're gonna slap a movie together and you know, it's gonna be a Picard movie or whatever you want to call it. But like, getting down to what truly is Star Trek, Final Frontier is exactly what true Star Trek, or at least to me it is, true Star Trek is or should be in a movie. By the plot, that is. Maybe not how it was executed. Maybe it would have been better if it was executed a little bit better, but the story overall, it's more Star Trek-y. So.
All right. So, Amy, tell us why Star Trek V is worse.
Well, I was going to say why Nemesis is better, of course. I'm sorry. Just going off with what Richard was saying, if I look at the themes of Nemesis, to me, that is more Star Trek. Nature versus nurture. Who are you at your core? We are Starfleet. We want to be better. We are going to improve ourselves. We're going to take our disadvantages and turn them into advantages, and we're going to progress. And even if you were raised in a dilithium mine, you have the choice right here, right now, to be better. And I love that. And we see it in Before, we see it in Data, you know, and Data gives a great thing. It's like, you know, even if you do have the same DNA, Before has the same things, but, you know, I choose to be better, you know, and it's so true. And I just think that is the essence for me, for what Star Trek is, of having this idea that we can be better even right now, even with all of our mistakes, all of our past. Like Shinzon had made all these choices and Picard still chose to believe that he could be better. I just think that is, to me, Star Trek. I love the themes in Nemesis. I think it's great. There's good things in The Final Frontier, as I mentioned, but The Final Frontier is a worse movie for me.
All right. Ken, your thoughts?
I don't think Amy and I saw the same movie. I really don't. And Amy, I'm not even being sarcastic in this aspect. Everything you just said is Star Trek, and I didn't see any of that in Nemesis. I didn't. Every time they had an opportunity to be better, they were worse. Okay? Shinzon, Before, they both failed. Even their own Starfleet, you know, ethics and values, especially when they went down to that planet. I thought that was horrible what they did. And I think The Final Frontier and Nemesis both are hurt by the same thing. You had William Shatner, who was running The Final Frontier, who took a concept that was difficult to put on film, and he didn't execute it well. Thematically, family and all that other stuff, that's Star Trek. The bad guy isn't really a bad guy. That's Star Trek. In Nemesis, the bad guy was the bad guy. The bad robot was the bad robot. So I don't see what you're saying there. It just doesn't connect to me. And I'm trying to follow what you're saying, and I can't. But where I say they both failed is, I think Shatner and his ego did not make... they didn't put together a very good script, put together a good concept, but not a good script. And I think Spiner and Patrick Stewart really just went too far with Nemesis. It became their show. Their acting was much, much worse than it was in the other theaters. And that's what really bothered me about it, because I love these guys and I love these characters, and it became their show again, and it was over the top. You know, when that part in Nemesis where they're saying, you know, we've been sitting here for 72 hours, that's how I felt watching that movie. Nice. And I just did, and it's not because, it's not a TNG TOS thing. It really isn't. I was very disappointed in The Final Frontier because I wanted that movie to kick ass. And I was very disappointed in Nemesis because I wanted it to kick ass, and it failed on more levels. And I would only say the reason I would prefer maybe The Final Frontier over Nemesis was maybe pacing was the other piece of it. I just felt it was a slog to get through Nemesis with a payoff that really wasn't there. And, you know, if you're going to kill a main character, do it right. I even think bringing Spock back to a degree was a cheat. You know, I'm glad they did, but it was a cheat because it took away from the Wrath of Khan. Having B4 there and just being, you know, I was thinking like, oh, geez, now Brent Spiner will, if they made another one, and I wish they had, so that they could have the proper goodbye. His ego was getting carried away, movie after movie. And I will say that Nemesis is not the worst, okay, of the movies. I don't think it is, and I don't think The Final Frontier is the worst of the movies either. But compared to both, I would take The Final Frontier. But for the reasons I said, not because, you know, it's a homage to TOS, but that's how much Nemesis really, really bugged me.
All right. So as you were talking about that, you know, William Shatner co-wrote Star Trek V and Brent Spiner co-wrote Nemesis. So is there a lesson there that you shouldn't have people that star in it co-write the stories?
Well, Leonard Nimoy did a great job in 3 and 4.
Oh, that's true.
Six.
And Simon Pegg did Beyond. Simon Pegg did Beyond.
But what is Nimoy known for? Humility. He was really known for humility. He was a very caring person. And I'm not to say that Stewart and Spiner weren't. But the more powerful they got in directing things, they spun Insurrection on its ear, and they did the same thing, I think, in Nemesis.
Okay. All right. Very interesting. Haley, your thoughts, and I think I know which one you think is worse, but go ahead.
She looks like she's getting ready to duck.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, you know, with these two, the worst for me, it is going to be Nemesis. There's too many plot holes. There's too much, again, like Ken kind of was saying, that there were ways that they could have taken the story instead, and that would have been a much more enjoyable movie and a better movie, and you still would have gotten the elements, I think, that Amy talks about being better and bettering herself and stuff like that. We still could have had that aspect of the Federation coming in and maybe trying to stop Chinzon from destroying Romulus and whatever other planets, and Picard still would have been able to say, hey, you know, you need to better yourself. Why are you doing? We still could have had all of that, but in a better written film. 5, yes, I will agree that there are plot holes and things that I don't enjoy about it, but there's so much that I do enjoy about it, and I love. And you had said, Justin, about with Bones and the parts and that he gets. And it's just, I don't know, it feels really comfortable. Like it's a warm pair of slippers and, you know, soup and whatnot on a cold day kind of thing. And I would pick that one. I'd pick 5 over Nemesis. So, yeah, it's going to go to Nemesis for me.
Okay. Zach, on to you.
So Nemesis is the weaker of these two films, in my opinion. I think ultimately, like Ken was saying, the TNG movies kind of devolved into this Picard and Data show. And I understand Patrick Stewart, the best actor, okay? And the captain. Makes perfect sense for him to be lead. Brent Spiner, excellent actor as well. Data, the runaway success, fan favorite character of TNG. And then, a really interesting character too, you know, being an android and all that. So I get why the movies gravitated towards them. Generations, fine. First Contact, it made sense with the Borg connection, cybernetics, and then with Data, and then, of course, Picard's history with the Borg. Then you get into Insurrection and Nemesis. Like, this would have to be about them all the time because TNG was more of an ensemble show. So, you know, the movies needed to reflect them better, and I don't feel like the movies represented the show as well. you flip over to Star Trek V. Star Trek V, like I said, I think it represents TOS better than any of the other movies. Like Richard was saying, like that's what Star Trek, you know, is and what it's doing. And I come down to really is, you know, Stuart Baird directed Star Trek Nemesis. He was not a Star Trek fan. He thought Worf Worf's voice wasn't deep enough. So Worf's voice is Michael Dorn's voice is mechanically lowered. And Nemesis,
is that right?
Yeah,
wow.
Watch
is
it really? Again. You'll notice.
I never heard that.
Yeah, when you watch it again, and with that knowledge, you'll be like, "Oh, you're right," because he sounds like this. You know, even though he does have a deeper voice.
And isn't Stuart Baird the one that thought that Geordi was an alien?
He thought Geordi was an alien, and he called him Laverne instead of LeVar. And this is crazy stuff. I want there to be a book about, you know, making Star Trek Nemesis one day. Had Jonathan Frakes directed this material, I think we had a much better film. It's unfortunate that, you know, for a final journey of the Next Generation, this is what we got. You know, Nicholas Meyer, you know, had a love for the characters and the franchise by the time he did Star Trek VI, so he understood what made it work, what didn't, you know, based off his experiences on 2 and 4. Stuart Baird, this is just another job for him, you know? And, you know, he's a director, it's Hollywood. I mean, he's mainly an editor, actually. He hasn't directed that many films. He's a prolific editor, but that doesn't always translate to being a great director, and I think that that's a huge weakness because, you know, directors... Five William Shatner, you know, they leave their stamp on the films, and these are the weakest films here, you know. And bottom line, I think we will look more fondly back on Five. At least I think this is a big reason I do is because we got Six. You know, had Five been it, and there was nothing else.
Oh yeah,
you would have been like, what? You know, and that's how I feel about
it. We'd be
Nemesis.
Having the same conversation. Yeah, yes. Exactly. It would be the Nemesis. Absolutely.
It would be a lot harder
that
conversation.
That is a great point. That is a great point.
But since we got Six to kind of soften the blow, we can kind of look at like this. It's like, oh, yeah, Star Trek V, you crazy random movie in there in between Four and Six. With Nemesis, it's like, it's the last one. It leaves that, you know, hanging last impression. And they, even though they touted it as like the last one, they left a loophole, like the final journey begins. Right. And they have, you know, they have Data being resurrected. So we could have had an 11, a 12, who knows, brought in more 24th century characters. I don't know if those movies would have been any good, but at least we would have had a shot for Nemesis not to just kind of be hanging there at the end like it does. And it's an easy target because it killed the film franchise, you know, until 09. So for 7 years, we got no Star Trek movies. It didn't make a profit at the box office. It didn't even make number one opening weekend. It lost to Made in Manhattan. I mean, these are cold, hard,
the
sad facts.
The only Star Trek movie not to open at number one, right?
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes.
It is true.
Jennifer Lopez's Made in Manhattan beat it in 2002. So there you go. I mean, and I just hate to see the TNG movies in that way because they deserve better. They deserve a Star Trek VI. They deserve an All Good Things. And, you know, Amy, I know you love Nemesis, but I think you would agree that they deserve something, you know, like that to cap it all off.
Wait. We could talk about that for a long time here, I'm sure.
We'll get her started. Well,
you need to flip it, right, and have me on the other end with the motion picture and any of the other shows because I'd be sitting there like Amy right now because I defend it to a fault and I know exactly how she feels. It's very, very difficult when somebody beats on or takes on something you love because they can't see it the way you do. It doesn't make her opinion any less. Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you enjoy it, Amy.
I do.
I wish I loved it as much as you.
Yeah, I think we all do.
All right. Well, I'll give my thoughts, even though we know that Nemesis has won as the worst. But I want to talk about it a little bit because, like, it surprised me a little bit because I always thought that people thought that Star Trek V was the worst, and I've seen definitely more love and affection for it than I thought was there, and not nearly as much for Nemesis, as you've heard. So a couple of things. Like, I've talked about how I enjoy the humor in Final Frontier. I think Cybok's story and arc is very interesting. There's some very Star Trek stuff there. At the same time, there are whole portions of the Final Frontier that I just want to excise and get rid of. Mm. I think we've mentioned the Klingon subplot with like the most one-dimensional Klingon possible, Claw, that's like
Claw.
Going out there, he's like destroying a Voyager probe, and then he's like, find me something other than space garbage. It's like, okay, I could deal without all of that. And the people, those kind of representatives on the planet, like the Romulan representative who doesn't even seem Romulan, the Klingon general who you only learn a little bit about in St. John Talbot's kind of interesting. But like, I feel like a lot of the stuff on Nimbus 3 is kind of wasted, and that the really great stuff happens at Yosemite with all the camping stuff, right? That's great. There's some great stuff with Cybok, especially on the ship, the god scene. Some of it is weird, but like what I find when I look at it is like I enjoy it, but there's probably more than half that I could just chuck right out, unfortunately, right? Then on the other side, I take a look at Nemesis, which, as I've said, I have some issues with, like the mental violation of Troy, the thing that Picard says. It's kind of a little jumbled and weird about what's going on with Shinzon, and there's all this distracting stuff. However, I find myself as I was watching it this last time, I was really enjoying like the first 45 minutes. I think it drags and there's some issues that I have. And I love the Troy Riker wedding. I think actually, like, even though the movie as a whole is the worst TNG movie, the last parts where you're seeing the Enterprise-E in space dock being repaired and you're seeing Picard and B4, I actually like that part and feel like it's a pretty good send-off. And I actually enjoy that. So there are definitely parts I don't like about Nemesis or that I want to, you know, rewrite, but I wouldn't chuck out nearly as much of it. So for me, actually, because of that, I think Star Trek V is a worse movie. And I found myself enjoying Nemesis more. So there you go, Amy. I'll send you off making you happy.
Oh, yay. That's two votes.
I wonder, though, because I can't see Justin's collar. Did you put that electronic collar you were threatening Richard with or Haley with? I don't know. I'm wondering.
Was that the violence that was threatened here or on Standard Orbit yesterday?
No, on Standard Orbit yesterday. That's what I was thinking. But I think you make very good points, though, Justin. You do. That's very clear.
That's mm-hmm. how I feel, and it's maybe not a popular opinion, but yeah, I do feel like there's a lot of Star Trek V that's just kind of wasted, and I could just do without. And there's parts of Nemesis I could do without, but not as much. So
it's interesting that from the six of us, four of you agree that Nemesis is the worst, and two of us agree Final Frontier is the worst. I did a little Twitter poll. And I'm just going to throw it out. It's actually, I got 50-50.
Is that right?
Yeah. And I thought I was doing so good because Final Frontier was ahead. And I was like, woohoo, see, I'm right. And then people started voting for Nemesis as the worst. And it ended up, as of right now, as a 50-50 draw. Well,
that's very interesting.
Huh. And I wonder if there's a lot of to what Zach had said. The fact that there was a redeemable film for the original cast to go out and sign the log. And if a lot of TNG people are ticked off that they just didn't get that farewell that they so deserved. I mean, they were on the air a hell of a lot longer than TOS ever was. And, you know, look at all of this whole team, except for me, we're all TNG people. You know, I all grew up on it. Mm-hmm. So I get it. And I think there could be anger just at the fact that they weren't allowed to have that final goodbye. Yeah. Yeah, that last hurrah, signing the logbook. You know, in fact, if they were to do that same scene with the Enterprise-E going into the sunset at another movie, I would have loved to have seen that bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Loved it.
Mm, yeah, that would have been great. All right, so I think we spent maybe even longer talking about this than we did the movies on Standard Orbit. But before we let you guys go, well, thank you, Ken, Haley, and Zach, for being here. So let us know where we can find you elsewhere online. So Haley.
Yeah, thanks for having me, especially as a first-timer over here on Earl Grey. People can find me on the Babel Conference, and you can also find me on Twitter. I am at Trekkie01D.
Excellent. And Ken, where can people find you?
You can find me, Haley, and Zach, and Richard in Amy's doghouse. I can't wait for the Babel Conference comments on this one. Anyway, you can find me on Twitter at BostonSCPO, and of course you'll find us on the Babel Conference talking about these two very good shows. And again, as my final thanks for having me aboard. I love joining this crew. You guys got a great show.
Excellent, thank you. And Zach, where can people find you online?
As for me, you can find me every week on Standard Orbit with Ken and Haley. You can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreonCach. You can also find me hosting my own podcast, Always Hold On to Smallville, about the Young Superman show. And we're on Twitter at AlwaysMallville with one S.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much again for being here, Standard Orbit crew. We'll have to have you on again sometime in the future.
Trek madness!
So a preview of next week's episode, we will be talking about the TNG episode, The Wounded. So go ahead and watch that episode that we'll be discussing next week. Well, it's been so much fun talking about The Final Frontier and Amy's favorite TNG movie with the Standard Orbit crew, but that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Orb.
All right. And as for Avery Brooks's ability to portray this mirror Sisko in a way that was believable to everyone else. I mean,
it's
just
awesome.
It's his personality. It's
yes.
Like he's in a way better as a mirror than he is as Prime, right?
Continuing mission.
I saw his Romulan Stormbird ship. Which is impressive, I have to say. You know,
a good looking ship. Yeah,
yeah, it is a good looking ship.
It's a good looking ship.
Awesome firepower.
Yeah, yeah, it is Starfleet's worst nightmare in our film. At least until a certain point, when Starfleet, regroups and makes a comeback and figures out how to beat Stormbird.
To the journey.
I think what I love about the Captain Proton sequence is it's such a Tom and Harry bromance thing. It's like Geordi and Data playing Sherlock Holmes on The Next Generation. Mm-hmm. It's so charming. Would you be Captain Proton or would you be Buster Kincaid if we were doing Captain Proton right now?
I can't be one of the good guys. I'm sorry.
You would be Arachnia. Or no, you would be Chaotica.
I think I'd be Chaotica's henchman.
Oh, okay. Yes. I see that.
Yeah, because I don't want to be the fully evil dude who's everybody's trying to destroy. I want to be the guy behind the evil dude.
See, I could totally pop out and go, the jig is up.
Yeah, you could.
Captain Proton is here. I'd be a great Captain Proton.
Oh, no, I saw you more as Buster Kincaid.
Oh, really? I'm a Buster
You're
Kincaid?
A Buster.
Oh, man. Thanks, Suzanne. Isn't that the way of things in life? You view yourself as a Captain Proton, but really you're a Buster Kincaid.
Standard Orbit.
To me, Star Trek history is like Earth history. It's like, oh yeah, well in 2265, the Enterprise looked like this. That's ridiculous. That'd be like if you make a movie about New York in the 1950s and the World Trade Center is there. Like, oh, well, that's wrong. That's not how it was, you know? But I have to remember that this is fiction and we're all here to have a good time.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all of these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review that helps others to find our show.
If you're not an Apple user, and you should be, no, I'm just kidding, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up.
If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Earl Grey. That will come right to us, and we might read your email on the show. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Richard, where can people contact you when you're not climbing mountains for like Captain Kirk?
Oh, man. I forgot to tell you guys about that. Long's Peak, my heart almost exploded out of my chest.
Yeah, you climbed a mountain yesterday, didn't you?
Yeah, Attempted. We got to mile three, and the trail was so icy, and I fell God knows how many times.
Really?
Ooh. Oh yeah, it was pretty bad. So we had to turn.
You needed
back.
Those rocket boots.
Yeah. Definitely needed that. Well, you guys can find me also on the Babel Conference. I pop in here and there, and I am on Twitter. My handle is xransom. Amy, where can people contact you when you're not toasting Riker and Troy at their wedding?
Well, I will always toast them at their wedding. That's awesome. I am here on the network, and I host The Edge with Patrick Devlin. That's about Star Trek Discovery, so you can find me there. I am on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson, but my favorite place is right here on the Babel Conference. Justin, where can people contact you when you're not sharing your pain with Cybok?
Well, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek. And you can also find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook. If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, the Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producers, Norman Lau, Justin Ozer, Michael Huter, and Thomas Appel. Thank you so much for supporting Trek FM, and especially Earl Grey.
So join us next time for another cup of Earl Grey.
Great joy and gratitude.
I need my pain!
Things are only impossible until they're not.